Chapter 5. When you have many questions on your mind, and you suddenly have an opportunity to ask them, the questions tend to crowd together and trip over one another, much like passengers on a crowded train when it reaches a popular station. With Bruce and the Snow Scouts asleep, the two elder Baudelaires finally had an opportunity to talk with the mysterious scout in the sweater. But everything they wanted to ask seemed hopelessly entangled.
"How?"
Violet started, but the question, "How did you know we were the Baudelaires?" stumbled against the question, "Who are you?" and fell back against the questions, "Are you a member of VFD, and what does VFD stand for?"
"Do,"
Klaus said, but the question, "Do you know where our sister is?" tripped over the question, "Do you know if one of our parents is alive?" which was already struggling with, "How can we get to the headquarters?" and, "Will my sisters and I ever find a safe place to live without constantly being threatened by Count Olaf and his troop as they hatch plan after plan to steal the Baudelaire fortune?" Although the middle Baudelaire knew that his last question was unlikely to be answered at all. "I'm sure you have lots of questions," the boy whispered, "but we can't talk here. Bruce is a light sleeper, and he's caused VFD enough trouble already without learning another of our secrets. I promise all your questions will be answered, but first we've got to get to the headquarters. Come with me." Without another word, the sweated scout turned around, and the Baudelaires saw he was wearing a backpack inscribed with an insignia they had seen at Caligari Carnival. At first glance, this insignia merely appeared to be an eye, but the children had discovered that if you looked closely, you could see the initials VFD cleverly hidden in the drawing. The scout began to walk, and the two siblings got out of their blankets as quietly as they could and followed him. To their surprise, he did not lead them toward the cave entrance, but to the back of the cave, where the Snow Scout's fire had been. Now it was nothing more than a pile of grey ashes, although it was still very warm, and the smell of smoke was still in the air. The sweated scout reached into his pocket and brought out a flashlight. "I had to wait for the fire to die down before I showed you," he said, and with a nervous glance at the sleeping scouts, turned the flashlight on and shone it above them. "Look!" Violet and Klaus looked and saw that there was a hole in the ceiling big enough for a person to crawl through. The last wisps of smoke from the fire were floating up into the hole. "A chimney," Klaus murmured. "I was wondering why the fire didn't fill the cave with smoke. The official name is vertical flame diversion," the scout whispered. "It serves as a chimney and as a secret passageway. It runs from this cave to the Valley of Four Drafts. If we climb up there, we can reach headquarters within hours instead of hiking all the way up the mountain. Years ago, there was a metal pole that ran down the center of the hole so people could slide down and hide in this cave in case of an emergency. The pole is gone now, but there should be carved toe holes in the sides to climb all the way up." He shone the flashlight on the cave wall, and sure enough, the Baudelaires could see two rows of small carved holes, perfect for sticking one's feet and hands.
"How do you know all this?" Violet asked.
The scout looked at her for a moment, and it seemed to the Baudelaires that he was smiling behind his mask.
"I read it," he said, "in a book called Remarkable Phenomena of the Mortmain Mountains." "That sounds familiar," Klaus said. "It should," the scout replied. "I borrowed it from Dr. Montgomery's library."
Dr. Montgomery was one of the Baudelaires' first guardians, and at the mention of his name, Violet and Klaus found they had several more questions they wanted to ask.
"When?"
Violet started.
"Why?"
Klaus started.
"Come!"
Another voice startled the Baudelaires and the scout.
the voice of Bruce, waking up halfway at the sound of the conversation. All three children froze for a moment as Bruce turned over on his blanket and with a long sigh went back to sleep. "We'll talk when we reach the headquarters," the scout whispered. "The vertical flame diversion is very echoey, so we'll have to be absolutely silent as we climb, or the echoing noise will alert Bruce and the snow scouts. It'll be very dark inside, so you'll have to feel against the wall for the footholds, and the air will be smoky, but if you keep your masks on, they'll filter the air and make it easier to breathe. I'll go first and lead the way. Are you ready?"
Violet and Klaus turned toward one another. Even though they could not see each other's faces through the masks, both siblings knew that they were not at all ready. Following a complete stranger into a secret passageway through the center of the mountains toward a headquarters they could not even be sure existed did not seem like a very safe thing to do. The last time they had agreed to take a risky journey, their baby sister had been snatched away from them. What would happen this time, when they were all alone with a mysterious masked figure in a dark and smoky hole?
"I know it must be hard to trust me, Baudelaires," said the sweated scout, "after so many people have done you wrong."
"Can you give us a reason to trust you?" Violet said.
The scout looked down for a moment and then turned his mask to face both Baudelaires.
"One of you mentioned the word xenial," he said, "when you were talking with Bruce about that silly pledge. Xenial is a word which refers to the giving of gifts to a stranger."
"He's right,"
Klaus murmured to his sister.
"I know that having a good vocabulary doesn't guarantee that I'm a good person," the boy said, "but it does mean I've read a great deal. And in my experience, well-read people are less likely to be evil."
Violet and Klaus looked at one another through their masks. Neither of them were entirely convinced by what the masked scout had said. There are, of course, plenty of evil people who have read a great many books, and plenty of very kind people who seem to have found some other method of spending their time. But the Baudelaires knew that there was a kind of truth to the boy's statement, and they had to admit that they preferred to take their chances with a stranger who knew what the word xenial meant, rather than exiting the cave and trying to find the headquarters all by themselves. So the siblings turned back to the scout, nodded their masks, and followed him to the footholds in the wall, making sure they still had all the items from the caravan with them. The footholds were surprisingly easy to use, and in a short time the Baudelaires were following the mysterious scout into the dark and smoky entrance of the passageway. The vertical flame diversion that connected the Mort Main Mountain headquarters to this particular volunteer feline detective's cave was once one of the most heavily guarded secrets in the world. Anyone who wanted to use it had to correctly answer a series of questions concerning the force of gravity, the habits of carnivorous beasts, and the central themes of Russian novels. So very few people even knew the passageway's exact whereabouts. Until the two Baudelaires' journey, the passageway had not been used for many years, ever since one of my comrades removed the pole in order to use it in the construction of a submarine. So it would be accurate to say that the vertical flame diversion was a road less travelled, even less travelled, than the path through the Mort Main Mountains on which this book began. While the elder Baudelaires had a very good reason to be on the road less travelled, as they were in a great hurry to reach the headquarters and rescue their sister from the clutches of Count Olaf, there is no reason whatsoever why you should be on the road less travelled and choose to read the rest of this woeful chapter, which describes their dark and smoky journey. The ashen air from the snow scout's fire was difficult to breathe, even through the masks, and Violet and Klaus had to struggle not to cough, knowing that the coughing sound would echo down the passageway and wake up Bruce. But there is no reason for you to struggle through my dismal description of this problem. A number of spiders had noticed that the footholes were not being used lately, and had moved in and converted them into spider condominiums. But you are under no obligation to read what happens when spiders are suddenly woken up by the sudden appearance of a climbing foot in their new homes. And as the Baudelaires followed the scout farther and farther up, the strong, freezing winds from the top of the mountain would rush through the passageway, and all three youngsters would cling to the footholds with their very lives, hoping that the wind would not blow them back down to the cave floor. But although the Baudelaires found it necessary to keep climbing through the rest of the dark day so they could reach the headquarters as quickly as possible, and I find it necessary to finish describing it so my account of the Baudelaire case is as accurate and as complete as possible, it is not necessary for you to finish reading the rest of this chapter, so you can be as miserable as possible. My description of the Baudelaire's journey up through the road less travelled begins on the next page, but I beg you not to travel along with them. Instead, you may take a page from Bruce's book and skip ahead to Chapter 6 and find my report on Sonny Baudelaire's tribulations, a word which here means opportunities to eavesdrop while cooking for a theatre troupe, with Count Olaf. Or you may skip ahead to Chapter 7, when the elder Baudelaires arrive at the site of the VFD headquarters and unmask the stranger who led them there. Or you may take the road very frequently travelled and skip away from this book altogether and find something better to do with your time besides finishing this unhappy tale and becoming a weary, weeping, and well-read person. The Baudelaire's journey up the vertical flame diversion was so dark and treacherous that it is not enough to write, "The Baudelaire's journey up the vertical flame diversion was so dark and treacherous that it is not enough to write, "The Baudelaire's journey up the vertical flame diversion was so dark and treacherous that it is not enough to write, "My dear sister, I am taking a great risk in hiding a letter to you inside one of my books, but I am certain that even the most melancholy and well-read people in the world have found my account of the lives of the three Baudelaire children even more wretched than I had promised, and so this book will stay on the shelves of libraries, utterly ignored, waiting for you to open it and find this message. As an additional precaution, I placed a warning that the rest of this chapter contains a description of the Baudelaire's miserable journey up the vertical flame diversion, so anyone who has the courage to read such a description is probably brave enough to read my letter to you. I have at last learned the whereabouts of the evidence that will exonerate me, a phrase which here means prove to the authorities that it is Count Olaf and not me who has started so many fires. Your suggestion, so many years ago at that picnic, that a tea set would be a handy place to hide anything important and small in the event of a dark day, has turned out to be correct. Incidentally, your other picnic suggestion, that a simple combination of sliced mango, black beans and chopped celery mixed with black pepper, lime juice and olive oil would make a delicious chilled salad, also turned out to be correct. I am on my way now to the Valley of Four Drafts in order to continue my research on the Baudelaire case. I hope also to retrieve the aforementioned evidence at last. It is too late to restore my happiness, of course, but at least I can clear my name. From the site of VFD headquarters, I will head straight for the Hotel des Noumonts. I should arrive by, well, it wouldn't be wise to type the date, but it should be easy for you to remember Beatrice's birthday. Meet me at the hotel. Try to get us a room without ugly curtains. With all due respect, Lemony Snicket. P.S. If you substitute the chopped celery with hearts of palm, it is equally delicious.
How do you slow this thing down?